Then we can close that loop and forget about chemical fertilizers, right? And one of the key things is that we're going to have to forget about chemical fertilizers.
In this episode, you'll hear about some modern practices that can help us live in sustainable harmony with nature rather than overexploiting it. Hi, I'm Karina Baskett. Wandering Nature is a travelogue of nature, culture, science, and sustainability. This episode takes place in the Amazon rainforest of Ecuador. Permaculture, which is the development of self-sufficient agriculture, is about as sustainable as you can get. The word permaculture was coined in the 1970s as a blend of the words permanent and agriculture, because the idea is to create an agricultural system that can sustain itself permanently, like forever. No need to add chemical fertilizers or pesticides, and nothing goes to waste.
Instead of putting some fertilizer, you could use nitrogen-producing plants and other plants, and they kind of help each other out and guard each other from insects. It's kind of like its own little ecosystem, and everything's in balance.
Katie Tackman is a student at Whitman College in Washington State. She was working on a project with SIT Study Abroad when I met her in Puyo, a city in the Amazon in Ecuador.
For the first 2 months, we have classes. We are located in Quito, and every few weeks we take a week-long excursion to different ecosystems. So we went to the cloud forest, we went to the Amazon, we went to the Galapagos. And then at the last part of our program, we have a month-long independent study project. So this is how I ended up in Puyo. We have a whole list of projects and places that we get to choose from, and I thought that this project sounded really interesting, so here I am.
Can you describe your project?
I'm doing banana circles, which is a technique of permaculture, and you make a large circle of bananas with a hole in the middle, approximately 2 meters in diameter and 1 meter in depth, and the roots of the banana trees, or you can also use papayas or coconuts or different types of palms, they contain any contamination of gray water. So it's a great system to use to put in all your gray water. And my focus has been pig pens, because they use water here to clean out their pig pens. And generally, it flows straight into some sort of stream. So the idea is to remove contamination from the rivers using this technique.
Gray water is contaminated household water, like from your sink, shower, and washing machine. Wastewater from the toilet is considered black water, and it's more complicated to treat because of its potential to transmit diseases. Gray water contains plant nutrients and can be used for irrigation if it doesn't have any chemicals like soap or bleach.
The roots are taking up all the nutrients, because the majority of the nutrients that you can find in the poop are what you need to grow plants, which is why you generally use animal feces as fertilizer. So it's just this big hole of fertilizer that generally helps make bananas and other plants that you use more productive. Mm-hmm. So it's not only containing all of the contaminated water, but it's also creating a productive circle of fruit and vegetables that you can eat.
As my grandmother always says, waste not, want not. Could my grandmother apply this technique to her garden in Texas?
I haven't really found anything that focuses on doing circles in temperate zones, but since I live in a more temperate zone, I'm hoping to do some of my own experimentation when I go home. I actually live on an orchard, so hopefully I can do some experimenting at my own house.
How has been the response that you've gotten from the people in Puyo?
I actually was lucky enough to go on television and advertise my project, and I received a lot of calls following, which was really exciting. And not everyone understood exactly what I wanted, but they were really eager to help and wanted to learn what it was about.
How do you convince a farmer to put in the work to put in a banana circle?
Well, I've been doing a lot of the manual labor when I go and teach my project, so I think that helps. And so it's not just them that's doing it, but I've also been suggesting that they do mingas, which are a type of community work, so you get more people to help out, and it's not just you. And then you can do a series of mingas to make all of the banana circles. Also, lots of the farmers, they want to stop the contamination from entering their streams so that they can use the streams for other things, like, for example, tourism. One guy I'm planning to make a circle, his house, he wants to use a stream for people to, like, go down in little boats and see his farm. So for him, it has an economical benefit. The reason why I'm happy I'm doing it is because it's making more people more conscious, and everyone I've taught seems to be excited about teaching other people.
Even if bananas don't grow in your hometown, you might be able to reuse your gray water in the garden or to flush the toilet. Do a search online for recycling gray water to find some easy techniques. After that, if you're looking to reduce your water consumption even more, our eco-sanitation expert Chris Canaday has quite the solution for you. This is another permaculture technique for recycling nutrients back to the soil rather than using fertilizers. If you're eating and/or squeamish about toilet matters, skip ahead about 13 minutes.
Here we have our ecological dry toilets, more properly known as urine-diverting dry toilets. We have one for sitting with the normal plastic toilet seat at the normal height people are used to. We promote the model for squatting more because it's a more natural position. That's the position people have used since before we were people. And the idea of having a sit-down flush toilet is only about 200 years old, but our bodies haven't changed. We're adapted to do our business squatting, right? And so it's better for people's health. There's less problems with hemorrhoids, constipation. It's more hygienic. Especially women don't have to worry about there being some germ on the toilet seat. And it's more accessible for little kids, right? It works because we stand here straddling with our feet on either side of this funnel that catches the urine. The urine goes back to the plants over here off to one side via perforated hoses, right? And it goes out there immediately before it has time to ferment and produce bad smell. And that's an interesting thing on its own, because in Europe, everyone working in this topic says that it's impossible to do this with perforated hoses, but I've been doing it for over 10 years here in the Amazon, and the holes don't get plugged. It seems that there might be ants, or maybe it's microbes, that are eating or decomposing this material before it plugs the holes, but the holes don't get plugged. And so that makes it a lot easier. No one has to deal with the urine, and it's going back to the plants so they can be productive again with that fertilizer. There's almost no diseases in urine. A normal person's urine is totally sterile. There's just a handful of strange diseases transmitted via the urine. But with the urine on the soil, even if people have those weird diseases, they're not going to get transmitted. And they're all going to get decomposed really quickly by the soil bacteria and everything. And so it's not a problem. When we have a big urban situation, collecting from a lot of different people, there's the concern that feces get in, right? So there might be fecal contamination of the urine, and then there's germs we have to worry about. But it's just a matter of storing that urine in some sort of tank or bottle or something for a number of months so that all of those nasties die, all of the pathogens die, and then it can be used as fertilizer on plants. So the feces are going to fall a little bit further back, very separately, so that they're not mixing with the urine. And in this case, they fall directly into a rice sack, which is a little bit surprising, but that's really all the containment that the feces need. And it's very accessible, it's very cheap, and it's actually better because it's helping to keep the feces and the dry cover material, the sawdust and the ashes that we add after each use, so it concentrates them in one place. Humidity can evaporate out of the cloth of the sack, and oxygen can filter in, right? So it's staying drier and more oxygenated and less likely to produce smells, right? When that sack is getting full, or it looks like it's starting to get heavy, we close that sack, put a date on it to know when it's finished its six-month jail sentence. In 6 months, because we're in a tropical climate, all of the nasties die and it just becomes soil. And there's no smell to it or anything. It looks exactly like soil. in the temperate zone in the United States, in Europe, we would be thinking of a one-year jail sentence, detention time for the feces, because everything's shutting down for half a year, more or less, with the cold winters. The dry material that we add, the sawdust mixed with wood ashes, rice hulls are really good, and there's other things that can be mixed in. This is to dry out the feces and to form a barrier so that flies can't go in and lay their eggs and smells can't come out. And since this dry material is drying out the feces, they stop making any smell once they're dried out, right? And so in particular, we want to have part of the material to be sort of airy, like sawdust, where air can filter through. And so the oxygen is getting in and humidity is evaporating out, because anywhere that we have dry aerobic conditions, the nasty smells that we know from pit latrines and sewer lines and all these nasty things, those bacteria don't live there. Those smells are simply not produced.
And can you tell me, what is the point of all this?
The point of all this is to reduce people's ecological footprint, right? This is probably one of the easiest ways to reduce our ecological footprint, because we're not using so much water that gets captured with big projects, spending who knows how much petroleum and cement and everything to make dams and catch the water in the first place, and more petroleum to treat the water and to pump it in some cases. So we're reducing that impact. We're reducing the impact of the chemicals that would otherwise get used to treat wastewater. We're reducing the impact on people's health of all the wastewater that doesn't get treated. You know, here in the third world, most of the wastewater just goes straight into the environment, right, which is totally ridiculous. And so we don't need petroleum or chemicals or anything, and everything is just going back to the soil and fertilizing the plants. And in our excrement, we have almost exactly the nutrients plants need to make our food again. The average person in a year urinates 4 kilograms of urea. And it's also logical. We, as adults, we eat all kinds of food and we use up the energy, but we're not growing. So all of the nitrogen and phosphorus and everything is cycling through us quickly or slowly, but it's going to come out eventually. Then we can close that loop and forget about chemical fertilizers, right? And one of the key things is that we're going to have to forget about chemical fertilizers, because they're mainly made with natural gas that through a chemical process is joined with nitrogen from the atmosphere and produces urea. It's a finite resource. It's a non-renewable resource. So in some point, there's going to be no more natural gas to do that. And they're also wiping out the phosphoric rock deposits pretty much everywhere in the world. The current estimate is that in about 20 years, there will only be phosphoric rock that they use for fertilizer in China and Morocco, right? And they'll be selling it to the other countries at whatever price they want, right? If people are still hooked to those chemical fertilizers. Whereas if people learn to recycle, they can forget about those chemical fertilizers and have much less impact. This whole system of ecological sanitation, especially the urine-diverting dry toilets, has a lot to do with global climate change and how to mitigate it and adapt to it. Because with waterborne sanitation, with the flush toilets, everything's mixed into water and is usually in anaerobic conditions where the bacteria convert it into methane. Methane's one of the worst greenhouse gases. It's 21 times worse than CO2. Everyone talks about CO2 because there's much, much more of it. And with this dry system, we don't have those conditions where methane is produced, so we're not producing the methane. There's going to be some CO2, obviously, with the breakdown of the material, but we're sequestering into the soil organic matter, carbon-rich organic matter, that's going to help improve the water holding capacity of the soil with respect to the droughts that are already increasing all throughout the world, right? so those droughts won't affect the plant so much if the soil can hold on to water better. You know, so obviously, if the land is pure sand, and with all of the soil erosion that's going on everywhere, a lot of soils are being converted into pure sand. The water just zips right through. But if we have a deep, rich soil with lots of organic matter, then it can hold on to the water. Another big producer of greenhouse gases that people usually don't take into account is all the chemical fertilizers, right? There's a lot of nitrous oxide, right, that's produced in the process of making and applying chemical fertilizers. And so with ecological sanitation and the feces and urine going back to the soil in orderly fashion, we don't produce all those greenhouse gases either.
Is there any way that somebody living in an apartment could try to get around their normal toilet and collect these things in a reasonable way?
One of the simpler units of these is just a wooden box at the right height to sit on. And inside we've got the urine diverting funnel that we make with 4-liter plastic bottles, usually the ones that are used to sell chlorine. And a little bit further back, there's a 5-gallon bucket. Right, and so the feces are falling into the five gallon bucket, and with each use we're adding the dry cover material, and so there's not a problem. We can have a vent pipe going somewhere to make sure that the air is going the right direction. That's a little bit more complicated, but maybe going out of a window or something. And one could also, for example, in an urban situation, have a little fan that might even be connected to the light switch, so that when people are in the bathroom, that the air is being pulled into the system and out the ventilation pipe the whole time, so smell can't be coming back. And then that bucket can be emptied into a bigger barrel or just into rice sacks, somewhere out of the way, somewhere where it's not going to get rained on, and then it has its date on it to know when it's ready.
Chris Canaday and Marcos Fioravanti of Fundación Interis are currently working on a Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation grant to develop a dry toilet that is pedal-operated, low-cost, easy to use, and odorless.
Nature's got a way of keeping herself occupied, of keeping track of who lives and who dies. Not that there's no in-between to report. I know a few creatures alive with a sort of death-defying look in their eyes.
If you're listening to this podcast, you probably live in a place where you have access to clean drinking water. But 900 million people in the world do not have that luxury. Solar disinfection could be part of their solution. It's a very easy, free way to purify water using the ultraviolet rays of the sun. Again, Chris Canaday.
This is a very interesting thing that's been worked out by Swiss scientists. It's called SODIS, solar disinfection. It's a way to kill all the disease-producing germs in water, taking advantage of ultraviolet rays from the sun. And it's done with these disposable Coke bottles. Or if we prefer, we can use transparent glass bottles. We don't want them to be more than 10 centimeters diameter, because that's how deep the UV rays go with full strength. We're going to fill the bottle to 3/4, put the cap on and shake it a little bit to oxygenate the water, then fill it all the way up to the top. All the water that we put in has to be at least transparent, right? We might still be worrying about germs, but at least transparent. We put the cap back on the bottle, lay it on a roof for at least 6 hours with sun or 2 days with clouds, and the ultraviolet rays together with the oxygen kill all the germs. Then we open it up and we can drink it straight. We can make baby formula with it, whatever, and with no worries. And it's very interesting because we haven't needed to waste cooking gas or firewood to boil the water, and we haven't had to poison the water with chlorine. And it doesn't cost anything. People just need to know those simple rules I just explained, and they can do it at no cost. the one thing you do have to plan in advance, right? You have to have your bottles going. You can't just purify that moment to drink in 5 minutes.
Visit sodis.ch to learn more. These ideas can help you live more naturally, ecologically, and cheaply, and these are just a small example of the innovative techniques for sustainable living that people are inventing and using all over the world. My next guest is traveling for 5 years to find these big ideas. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Frédéric Sebron. I'm French, and I'm traveling with my family all around the world for 5 years. I try to meet people who have a good idea for the Earth.
Can you give an example of the kind of people that you've met and the kinds of things that they do for the Earth?
Last time, it was in Peru, in Lima exactly. I met a guy, his name is Joaquim. The name of his project is Tierra de Niños. For him, each niño, each kid, need to help Earth through a jardin, a small jardin, for example, 1 or 2 square meters. And here, the niño can do exactly what he wants. And usually he grow up a plant he like for him, but also a plant for someone else, his family, for example, and third, a plant for the Earth. 3 plants, at least. And his project is beautiful, really. In Chile, we met people who catch water through the fog from the sea. Because of the desert, very hot, and the sea cold, you've got fog who climb the mountain, and here they put nets. And with this, they catch the fog to get water. It's a very good idea also. In Argentina, I have a guy in Salta who do the promotion of solar cooking. It work well because the problem everywhere is wood. Everybody is miss wood to cook and to get eating. And this guy go everywhere through the small village, and he show how to build things to cook with few wood. Well, many projects like this.
You're making a documentary about this or a TV show?
I shoot pictures of all those projects, but I do the editing in my mobile home. And I put it on my website for free, just for people, to help people. Because the thing is, I think best is to do those program, okay, for people everywhere through the world, but also to help the project I visit with those video. Many times they don't have videos, and it's quite good for them. And later, yes, I hope to get when I will have a 40-50 project, I hope to sell it on a TV program, of course.
Why did you decide to do this with your family?
Well, I'm 46 now. I'm doing this work since 25 years. I visit a lot of country to do films about animal or nature, but always alone. And now I wanted to do it with my family because I miss them when I'm traveling, and because the world is beautiful and I want to show this to my family first.
And how old are your children?
Well, Martin have 5 years, and Shin, she's got 2 years old.
And did you ask them if they wanted to go, and what did they say?
Well, we tried last year in Iceland. We visit project about geothermal power, and it was fantastic, really. I think any children, the best for any children is to live with our parents always, 24 hours. And, it is a problem in our society now. We are working quite a lot, and it's very difficult to live with the children. My project, the best is the first point for me. It's to live with my children, and for them, it's okay to, for sure, look at them.
Can you tell me about how you're traveling?
Well, we have a big truck. Inside, we have all we need: bed, kitchen, bathroom. It was very important for me for my children to get the same place to sleep during this trip. It is possible to change every day, but it quite. It's better like this. So I brought this truck, 4x4. I can go everywhere. And we can live everywhere also because it's a truck. We have a lot of capacity of water, fresh water. We've got also grey water and dark and black water, not to throw it in the nature, of course. And we can live 15 days in a place with all we need. Power, water, all we need. It's part of the project to get this tool to travel.
Can you tell me the name of the project?
The project is Martin Autour du Monde. Martin Around the World. Martin Autour du Monde. And the website is the same, www.martinautourdumonde.com.
I'll definitely put a link on my website to that. Okay. Is there anything I've forgotten to ask?
It's a personal project and a professional project, both. And there is many link between the two. Like I told you, we try to live as clean as we can. And it's a way, I want to show this way to my children and my family. So we are doing that. Plus, my work is a film director. I want to do this work to help people to communicate. And we are going both, really.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, too.
I'm too thirsty to drink water. You ask, what am I thirsty for? I'm thirsty for a life I can't afford. Check your book on life, the one you'll read. What was penciled in is now too faint to see. To me, that's opportunity.
You can find links to the Martin Autour du Monde project and all the websites and organizations that were mentioned during the show on the podcast website.
Washed ashore, now I can board for free. Let the current carry me like a child tossed in the sea. Check your book of life, the one you're reading. What was penciled in is now too faint to see. But to me, that's opportunity.
Thanks for listening. Find the Wandering Nature podcast in iTunes or stream episodes from the website. On the website, you can also see slideshows with photos and audio from Ecuador, Chile, Panama, and Spain. And you can read the blog, get in touch, and more. That's at wanderingnature.com. This project is made possible by a Thomas J. Watson Fellowship, which provides funding to recent college graduates to pursue a year of independent, non-academic study abroad. Wandering Nature is produced by myself. The theme music is by James Boudreau, and in this episode we also heard from DJ Brownbum, Carl Blau, and Learning Music. You can legally download all the music used in this podcast from the freemusicarchive.org, and there are links to each episode's songs at wanderingnature.com.